Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
It's Mom Talk Radio, and I am so excited that in this busy, crazy, harried time that you have found time for me, and I have found time for you, and that we get to share the next 50 minutes together, and we're going to talk about a whole lot of really interesting things. But, you know, speaking about the chaotic times of the holiday season, Kesha, of all, many of us might have kids that listen to Kesha, or maybe you exercised Kesha. I happen to exercise to her. She's got a new song out, and I have to say, I love it. It talks about the fact that these are the good old days, like how you never realize that the good old days are the good old days while you're living the good old days. And I really think no matter how old you are, you can really relate to the lyrics. And I actually snapped chatted with my daughter and said, hey, have you heard the lyrics to the new Kesha song? And she's like, oh, Mom, it was so awesome. You know, it talks about not having a date for the prom and having fun anyways and going on crazy diets that we don't really need to be on. And anyways, it's just really, if you haven't heard it, go on YouTube, ask your child. I'm sure they've heard it. And really impress your kid and say to them, hey, can I listen to the new Kesha song with you? It's a really good lesson, not only for moms, but for kids as well. So speaking of our kids in the holidays, I guess the hot toy is fingerlings, but don't distress if you can't find one. There's a lot of other really great things out there. My favorite is the Scope Junior from microscope.com. Really awesome way to get your children into the whole STEM learning and to provide them with something that they might not think about putting on Santa's list. So check it out. And for those older, difficult people, maybe some kind of fidget toy. You know, fidget toys are all the rage right now, and you can get them for less than $15. The original fidget cube is one that I actually carry in my pocket, and it actually kind of calms me and it soothes me. The other one is called Tangle, and kids are loving this, and so are adults. It's designed by an artist, but check it out. You can get a Tangle at Walmart for less than $10, and it makes a really great stocking stuffer. So check out some of those finds, my best finds for the holiday season. And I want to remind you that Mom Talk Radio is brought to you by Pre-Mama. Pre-Mama is the supplement for prenatal and new moms. You can check it out at drinkpremama.com. When we return, we're going to get right into the show. We're going to be talking with Dr. Dawn Kingston. She is an associate professor at the University of Calgary, and we're going to be talking about the most important prenatal health screening that you're not getting.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I'm delighted to have with us Dr. Dawn Kingston. She is an associate professor at the University of Calgary in Alberta, Canada, and the holder of the Lois Hole Hospital for Women Cross Provincial Chair in Prenatal Mental Health. She has a lot of experience when it comes to prenatal health, and we're going to talk a little bit today about all the prenatal health screening that you are not getting. And Lord knows there's a lot that you are, but Dr. Kingston is going to kind of tell you where you should also be looking. So welcome, Dr. Kingston, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you, Maria. Very happy to be here this morning.
Well, we're excited to have you. So what should women be thinking about as far as prenatal testing when as they're going through their pregnancy?
Mm-hmm. One of the big areas that we advocate for is screening for emotional health in pregnancy. That may be high stress, anxiety, or depression. And, you know, for the most part, we're used to thinking about postpartum depression. We hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. But most of the research and most of the trends that we're seeing over the last few years really are pointing us toward the pre-pregnancy period, because we're finding that as many as 50 to 80% of women that had postpartum depression had anxiety or depression symptoms in pregnancy that could have been detected and treated much earlier.
Yeah. So do you think that women develop anxiety while they're pregnant, or is it something that's happening as part, like something that just was there and is escalated?
Yeah, really good question. We believe, well, what the evidence shows is that most women that have depression or anxiety in pregnancy probably had it before at some time in their past. Might have been as a teenager, might have even been as a young child, but for most women, there's some kind of a past history of depression or anxiety. Truthfully, we don't know how many women develop anxiety or depression for the first time in pregnancy. What we know in the postpartum period is that only about 5% of women actually get depressed for the first time in the postpartum period. We just don't know that for pregnancy, but we do suspect that for many women, it's almost a recurrence of depression or anxiety they've had in the past.
So is this something that you should bring up to your doctor before you get pregnant, or, you know, what stage of the pregnancy do you bring this up?
Absolutely. It would be the most ideal if during just kind of a well woman checkup, if a physician is really aware that a woman has had a past history, it makes things a lot easier for her. It also is sometimes easier to disclose that information to a physician outside of the pregnancy than it is inside, when women feel like they have to have it all together. They wanted this pregnancy, but now they're struggling and maybe there are concerns around that. So in Canada and in the U.S., for the most part, there isn't routine screening in pregnancy. In other words, a physician may not ask you, or a midwife or an obstetrician may not ask you, how are you doing in terms of symptoms of anxiety or depression or high stress? So at this stage, it really is a good idea if a woman is struggling or she's had past struggles to raise the issue with the physician. Absolutely. We know that that's hard for women. We know that it shouldn't have to be that way. But until our system turns around and we have routine screening where every woman is asked that question, the best thing to do is have the woman ask herself, especially if I can just add, if she's on an antidepressant, because many women will come off of their antidepressants without talking to their doctor, mostly because they are worried about the baby. So those kind of conversations, though, are best had with the physician and not made independently by the woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. So let me ask you about that anxiety and depression. If you suffered the anxiety and depression prior to getting pregnant, or you are depressed or have anxiety while you're pregnant, are you more likely to have postpartum depression?
Absolutely. The risk is quite high. And as I mentioned, even as many as 50 to 80% of women that experience depression or anxiety in pregnancy continue to have it into the postpartum period. But this is the other thing that we're finding in our work here in Canada, and it's been repeated in France and in Australia. We're also finding that for 40% of women who have depression or anxiety in pregnancy, untreated, they still have symptoms at age 5 when their children are 5 years old.
Wow.
It really, we used to think, you know, oh, this is hormonal. It's going to go away on its own. But the biggest mm-hmm. risk factors are not hormonal. And without a doubt, for almost half of the women, those symptoms carry on for a much longer period than what we expect. And here's the other piece. If a woman is struggling with high levels of depression or anxiety, they're going to stay high. until the child is 5 years old. And the only reason I say five is because that's as far as our research has gone. We expect that it continues. If a woman has moderate symptoms, they stay moderate. So there's this kind of stability starting in pregnancy and, you know, for a long time into the childhood period.
We just have a few minutes left. What do you suggest that women do? Is there resources that they can go to learn more about this? What is the message?
Definitely, if a woman feels like she's struggling with anxiety or depression or stress that she thinks is, you know, more than what she's used to handling, then she should speak with her physician as the first point of contact. Lots of women get a bit derailed from having that conversation because they might talk to their mother, their friend, their partner, who might say, oh, no, it's just pregnancy. But honestly, that's what derails women. And in many cases, women know for themselves that they're struggling. So number one, talk to your physician, especially if what you're experiencing lasts for 2 weeks or longer. I think a second message is when you look at a list of symptoms of anxiety and depression, you don't have to have all of them in order to say, I need help.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. And I think thirdly, to really understand that, you know, it doesn't have to be severe to get help. Lots of times women will think, I'm not going to talk to my doctor because I'm not bad enough off. But, you know, the reality is that even mild ongoing symptoms can have an impact on the mom and can have an impact on the developing baby. So get help.
Right.
Get your voice.
And also, you don't want to be suffering from that anxiety until your child is 5 years old, because those early years are just so, so important. Thank you so much, Dr. Kingston, for being with us today. We have a link to information and resources, and we appreciate so much you bringing that to our attention. And when we return, we're going to be turning the spotlight on one mom who is running on life, and we'll tell you how.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
During this time of year, I can only imagine how busy a mom is, particularly one that has three children that are 6, 4, and 1. Can you imagine all those stores she's run into or online looking for those fingerlings right now? Anyways, we are excited to have with us Jenny Albertson. She is the mom of three, and she's running on life. Her blog is runningonlife.com, and you can find her on Twitter at runningonlife1. Welcome, Jenny, so much for being here today on Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you.
So one thing that you and I have in common is that we both fit running and exercise into motherhood and on a daily basis. So,
yep.
So yay to us runners. I wear a bracelet on my hand that says, well, I have two. One says everything happens for a reason. And the other one right next to my watch says just run. And so I'm right there with you with that passion of running. How do you think that helps you in managing three kids under six?
Oh, well, there's a lot of stress that goes in with parenting. And for me, I've been running for 20 years, and running has always been kind of an outlet for me that I can kind of de-stress. And it's kind of my comfort and, you know, something that I can always fall back on. And so
right.
I think for me, it's just the passion that goes into it. It's something to do for me, for myself. It's my me time.
And so how do you think that makes you a better mom? Because I always thought that, you know, taking that time out for me just helped me be a better mom. How do you think it helps you be a better mom?
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And, you know, there's also the endorphins. You get back from running, and you feel like, oh, I did something really good, and it was healthy for me and for my body, my brain, and now I'm ready to conquer my day. So I think a mix between, you know, it's kind of, we talk a lot about self-help and self, you know, taking care of yourself first.
Uh-huh.
And I really believe that if you take care of yourself first, you're going to be able to take care of your family better.
Right.
You know,
right.
If nobody's taking care of you, then you can't take care of them.
This is the time of the year that people decide, particularly moms, I'm going to get in shape for the new year. I'm going to make a resolution to get in shape and feel better. And I'm going to take up running. What is your advice to those moms who are saying, you know what, 2018, I'm getting into running? How do you start?
I think a lot of that has to do with finding time that works for you. What one time is going to work for you, it's not going to work for everybody else. So scheduling that and making sure you keep consistent on that schedule. But there's also a big part of flexibility. You know, some days you're not going to be able to run at that time, or some mornings you're going to have to sleep in because baby's been up all night. And it's okay to miss a day here and there. It's not something to stress over. And it's not something to say, well, I'm just going to give up on. But if you schedule it in and make sure it gets done as a priority when you have time to do it, it's going to happen.
That's some really good advice. You know, I travel a lot for business. And the very first thing that goes into my luggage is my tennis shoes. And it's the very first thing I do in the morning. And I just find if when you prioritize it, it becomes part of the habit and,
yep,
and the ritual.
Yep, exactly. I was going to say the same thing. Once you get it into a routine and a schedule, it becomes a habit. And then you don't have to really even think much about it. You just do it.
That's right. That's right. So we only have 2 minutes left. Can you just tell me a little bit about what moms will find on your blog?
So obviously I talk a lot about running. I'm not a coach or a trainer, but I've, you know, so everything that's on there about running is from my 20 years of experience. And I talk about my goals, and I talk about setting goals, and I talk about, you know, how-tos or injuries. But I also talk a lot about my parenting. There's stories about our day here and there on there. And there's products that we love as a family that we use that I like to review or give a shout out to. So every other mom out there can kind of say, hey, I want to give that product a try.
So it's a lot of really good stuff. And I want to encourage everyone. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing some of your day. I appreciate so much you sharing your life and with moms out there. And if you're going to pick up running, I think you'll be inspired by Jenny's blog. When we return, we're going to have a very famous person with us. Parenting coach and author Faith Collins is joining to talk about her new book, Joyful Toddlers and Preschoolers.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today Faith Collins. She is a parenting coach and author. You may have heard about her. She's been in a lot of places. She has a new book out, Joyful Toddlers and Preschoolers, Create a Life That You and Your Child Both Love. And I actually reviewed it on my site. And the book is filled with advice for parents looking to minimize power struggles between your headstrong little ones and to strengthen that parent-child bond. So welcome, Faith, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, gosh, can headstrong children, can we use this on teenagers as well as toddlers? That's
some people have told me they've used it on their spouses with great success.
Oh, there you have it, man. That's definitely something that I could use. So you have, you know what? I'm kind of interested. Headstrong children, are they born that way or do they grow up that way?
It's about 50-50. And so about half of what kids is what they come in with, and about half is based on their environment and their relationships. And so that means that parenting style really matters, right? And the research on parenting style is also really clear that there's one style that really is much more successful than others, and that's when parents have high levels of warmth and high expectations. But how do you maintain that high warmth when you're enforcing boundaries? That's what my book is all about.
This morning, just this morning, my son and I had a conversation. I guess there's some survey going around of like your love style or whatever. And love language, that's it. And one of them was, are you warm? I don't really consider myself a warm person, you know, like I show my love through experience, spending time with someone, but I'm not like cuddly. I was never really kind of good with that with my kids, you know, like I think because I didn't get a lot of cuddles and hugs and stuff. Is that like, how do you define warmth? Because I, you know, that's kind of an interesting, like, warmth.
Absolutely. Right. And there are totally different ways of expressing warmth and expressing affection and support. And, you know, the way that young kids feel connected is different than how adults feel connected. Right. Like I feel connected by having a glass of wine together and talking about past experiences and feelings. And kids feel connected through, you know, movement and roughhousing, through imagination, through being silly together, through, you know, songs and nursery rhymes, and also through love and hugs and snuggles and those things. But so if those snuggles don't come easily to you, there are other ways of connecting with your kiddo. I came up with an easy sentence for you to remember. And I say, if you want to connect with your child, don't forget to smile. S is for singing. M is for movement, movement and touch, really. I is for imagination. L is for love, love and affection. And E is for exaggeration or humor. So all of those are ways that anything that you do where you get your child saying, again, right? Let's do it again. That's right. A sign I'm feeling connected to you in this moment, right? And we can use those ways that we know that our children feel connected to help them to do what we've asked, to do all of those must-do parts of the day, getting dressed, eating, you know, coming to the table, getting out the door, all of the things that are those must-do things. We can incorporate mm-hmm. Those ways of connecting. And we all know if we turn something into a game, those no's melt away. But we think that we're tricking them. We're not tricking them. We're connecting with them. And that makes, mm-hmm. when we connect with them, then they are happy to be responsive to us also most of the time.
As we are so busy this holiday season, and, you know, sometimes our children ask for that attention by acting out, right? Or being stubborn. Is there something that we should keep in mind?
Yes. The big thing to keep in mind is that almost every time that children act out, what they are really saying is, I don't feel as connected to you in this moment as I wish I did. Mm-hmm. And it is really a challenge to take annoying our child who's doing something that they know we don't like and translating that in our own heads as, I wish I were more connected to you right now, right? Like, we don't want to respond with a joke or a laugh or a snuggle or, you know, like, we are mad. But when we can respond to the underlying need, then those behaviors can just melt away. And, you know, I'm a parent, too. I'm in the trenches with all of you.
Right.
We got a new puppy recently, and my daughter has to whine and cry. And, you know, this little 5-pound bundle of energy is somehow terrifying to her. And she's not getting the attention that she wants from me. And so she acts out. Right. And when I can take a deep breath and remember she is asking for connection, then she just melts into me of like, oh, thank you. This is what I wanted.
Sometimes I notice this even with my teenagers. It's so easy to look at a behavior and call it bad or inappropriate when in reality, it's probably telling us something else. I mean, my husband and I caught ourselves the other day going, oh my gosh, that wasn't a bad behavior at all. What she was trying to do was XYZ, you know?
Yeah. And you know, you can, instead of, it doesn't mean that you ignore the behavior, but right. when you address the need first, oh, it looks like you need a snuggle. Oh, it looks like right. you're trying to play, right?
Right.
Oh,
right.
don't do it by pulling the dog. Let's do it this way.
Right, right. right. And really good stuff. Yeah, really good stuff. So, Faith, we're going to have you back because, like, this would be great for the new year. So we're going to have to talk more about this. But for now, I want to direct everyone to Faith Collins, joyfultoddlers.com. And I'm telling you, as a mom of teenagers, you could actually use this for your teenagers. Thank you so much for joining us today. And when we return, we're going to turn our attention to Ansley Earnhardt. She is the author of Through Your Eyes, My Child's Gift to Me.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am super excited to have with us Ansley Earnhardt. She is the author of Through Your Eyes, My Child's Gift to Me. She's currently a journalist and the co-host of Fox News Channel's Fox and Friends, something I watch all the time on the treadmill. She has will be donating a portion of her proceeds from Through Your Eyes to Folds of Honor, an organization that provides scholarships and assistance to spouses and children of fallen soldiers in service to America. An awesome organization. So, Ansley, first of all, thank you for being here, and thank you for everything you're doing for those kids and spouses of fallen soldiers.
Oh, well, their parents have done so much for us, so that's the least I can do. But thank you for having me on, Maria.
Tell me a little bit about the book. What motivated you to write this book?
I wrote a children's book when I was pregnant about all the mm-hmm. little sayings and notes that my dad left next to our cereal bowls every morning. He would write a little scripture or a little poem or a little note next to our cereal bowl. And I remembered all of those lessons because he's still, to this day, trying to teach us a lesson and constantly sending us little notes. And,
right.
you know, I don't think we'll ever get past that. But when we were growing up, it was a little annoying. We were like, Dad, stop trying to always teach us a lesson. But now I'm so grateful that he did that. And then that ended up being, we combined all those lessons and made it a lyrical lullaby. And it's a beautiful children's book called Take Heart, My Child. And those were all the things I wanted to pass on to my daughter when I was pregnant. Just take heart. I've got you. I love you. God has you. And you don't need to stress. You don't need to worry. You have one life. This is not a dress rehearsal. So just do whatever you can to make yourself happy and try to be a good person and bless other people and put other people first and love everybody, no matter what they look like, who they are, from where they come. And so that was the message of the first book. And then when I had my baby, I learned so much from her, and I've learned that she's teaching me to slow down and to stop and just embrace every single day. I mean, you know, being a parent is such a gift. And we think when we're pregnant, that we're going to try to, you know, give them this great life, and we're going to teach them French, and we want them to play the piano, and we want them to ride horses, and we want all the things that we didn't get a chance to do. And we want to get to a point in our lives where we have enough money in the bank, and you know, everything has to be, and we spoil our children. And then you have your child, and you realize what a gift it is. And it's not about all the money you spend or how much money you have in the bank. When I remember giving Hayden a gift, and she didn't care about the gift. She pulled the tissue paper out and was pulling it apart. And then my husband and I started ripping the tissue paper, and she would just cackle. She thought that was great. She doesn't know the difference in a gift and tissue paper. It's just about being there for them and showing up every day and walking through life with them. And she saw rain for the first time, or a dog for the first time, and I was there. I mean, this is a human being, and it's my child, and I got to experience all this with her. So the second book, Through Your Eyes, is walking through life, and it's telling our children, when we're reading them this book, how much we're learning through their eyes, and we're walking through life with them, and we get the chance to experience life all over again.
I think what you're really saying too, and it, when you look through their eyes, it forces you to do what I think is the most important thing with your children, and that's being present. And you really have to be present when you stop and see the world through their eyes.
You're right.
So many of us who have a career or even have multiple children, there's so much going on that it's hard to be truly present, even with technology, you know, to be truly present with our children when we are taking that walk and seeing them discover rain. Or, I mean, I remember the first time one of my children threw up, like she couldn't figure out where this was coming from, you know, and yeah, it was a terrifying moment, but it was kind of cool, you know, like,
Oh my God,
I never thought about that, you know?
So, you never appreciated that before.
Right, exactly. So it does make you truly be present with your children. So let me ask you this, because I do. I watch you all the time. And, you know, anyone that's got kids at home is probably thinking, oh, my gosh, how can she like be so together? Like, what's your trick, or what is the one thing that for balancing work and life that has helped you stay connected to your child and look like you're together?
It was recently, I did a book signing a few days ago, and one of the ladies that came to have her book signed, she said, you know, you have this perfect life, and I didn't have this perfect life when I was growing up. And I said, you know what? I didn't have a perfect life, and I still don't have a perfect life. And, you know, there are things going on in my life, and there were when I was growing up, but I have chosen to take my life and make the best of it. And so I love my job. I am very fortunate that I go to work every day and I love it. I love coming home to my daughter. Now, life is not perfect, but I'm choosing to embrace the positives in life and enjoy every single step of it. And I know based on my past that God has this, and he's got me in the palm of his hand. And there's a scripture that says, in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. And that's why my first book is called Take Heart, My Child, because God has overcome all of the sadness, all of the cancer, all of everything that is the evil in the world. You know, I'm reporting on all the evil. You're reporting on all the evil in the world every single day. There's always another shooting. There's another terrorist attack. And how do you get through all that? You know that God has overcome all of this. And so I choose to focus on the positives in my life and count my blessings, because I do have many of them. So I think that's the secret. And you know, the beauty of being, in my opinion, of being a woman is we share our feelings. so we might get together with all of our girlfriends, and we're not afraid to share our feelings, and that's healing for me. So I think it's just important to be honest with others and to be transparent and try to be compassionate and see other people walk through life and look at life through their eyes too. And so that's the best advice I can give. I haven't figured it all out, and I don't have everything under control, but that's always helped me.
I agree with everything you're saying, and I agree with most of the things you do, except for your college team is playing Clemson, and then I totally disagree with you. But anyways, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and we have a link to AnsleyEarnhardtBooks.com, and I've got it on Mom Talk Radio, so everybody check her out on Fox and Friends. Wake up in the morning like I do with Ansley. Thank you so much for joining us, and come back soon. We are going to dig into the archives when we come back from this break.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
This portion of Mom Talk Radio originally aired in May of this year.
Our last guest of this show is Michelle Hutchinson. She is the co-author of The Happiest Kids in the World, How Dutch Parents Help Their Kids and Themselves by Doing Less. And it's an interesting topic because we've hit on it in other segments of other shows, and we talked about it earlier in this show. So let's talk to Michelle. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
So you live in the Netherlands with your children?
I do, yes.
And how old are they?
Mine are now 10 and 12.
Tell me about the book you're co-authored. How did this come up? Had you done research? Had you lived in other parts of the world with your kids and noticed a difference? Tell us a little bit about where the ideas for the book came from.
Well, I moved to the Netherlands just before the birth of my son. I was actually married to a Dutch guy, but living in London. And I intended to have just my maternity leave, so 6 months in Amsterdam, and then to go back to my job in London with my kid. But once I got there, I realized there was an enormous advantage to raising my children in Amsterdam. and parenting was going to be a lot more relaxed, and a lot of the problems I would have been facing if I'd stayed back home were just taken out of the picture.
And do you mean problems because you would have been working and you're not working, or what do you mean by problems?
I got a job in the Netherlands quite soon, so maybe when my son was about six or 7 months old, it was quite easy to get a job.
So it wasn't work. I was a working mom.
Parents in the Netherlands have got a much better work-life balance. It's normal to go home at like 5 o'clock, so you work 9 to 5. It's normal to go home, pick up your kids, and have dinner together as a family. Whereas I think in England and America, parents work much later. That wasn't really the main thing that attracted me. One of the things was the schooling system. So I've come from a very competitive schooling environment in the UK, which is similar to what you guys have here.
In the US, yes, very much so.
Yeah, and it's quite different in the Netherlands. For a start, they're all state schools, so you don't have to choose between a state school or a private school. Education is free. Children are taught to grow and develop as individuals more than they are pressurized to succeed as the be-all and end-all of education.
Academically, so they look at the whole child versus
the
just an academic
growth brain.
Yeah.
And teaching the child to think for themselves, to become independent, kind people. So it's a completely different approach to education that I really like.
That's interesting. And my brother actually works for a big company, a global company, and he said he works with people who, again, are from that part of the world. And they do have almost their grading. Your grading system is different, too, I think, isn't it?
That's
like
right,
pretty much if you get it's basically pass fail. Is that correct?
Yeah. You just have to pass, for example, your pre-academic education, like a kind of baccalaureate if you want to go to university. So there's no, you don't have to get all A's or anything. You just have to pass at a certain level. And actually, passing is hard enough. So it's pretty difficult to get an A is not really, only very, very few people get A's. It's not really expected of anyone.
Oh, that's interesting. So you wrote the book based on your experiences in comparison to living in the UK versus the Netherlands.
Yeah, my co-author is American, so she writes about her experiences with younger children, comparing it between growing up in San Francisco and her children now growing up in the Dutch countryside.
Okay, so your co-author is American and you're Dutch. Okay, so what would you think was the most difficult adaptation for you as a parent when you? Obviously you chose that culture and society because of it was more laid back, but was there anything that you didn't like about it or you still don't like about it?
It's not that I didn't like it, but it took me a while to get used to giving my children such a free rein. So there's a big focus on teaching children to be independent and to play on their own, to go on their own on their bikes. And teaching that independence starts at quite an early age, at about 4 or 5. It's a very careful approach. So it's not you just put your kids in the park and leave them there. It's not like that. It's like you give them a tiny bit more independence each time that's age appropriate. So by the time my daughter was 9, she was cycling to school on her own. And that's a process which I explain in the book, how we got that far and how we taught her to be safe enough to do that.
Right. And Dutch children are ranked the happiest in the world, you're saying.
According to UNICEF, correct? Yes, they were ranked out of 29, the 29 most industrialized countries. They came top.
Sounds like a great read. So thank you so much, Michelle, for joining us again. The book is The Happiest Kids in the World, How Dutch Parents Help Their Kids and Themselves by Doing Less. And it's available everywhere, all major booksellers, Amazon, and we'll have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio next week.
It's been great having you here with me today. I look forward to next week. In between, don't forget to tweet at me @MomTalkRadio. See everyone next week. Have a great week, everyone.